Over the last 2 days, we've been looking at quantum mechanics from a few different perspectives. We looked at wave functions and state vectors, and then density matrices. And we tried to make connections between these types of formalisms. In this lecture, we're going to look at another formalism called the path integral formalism, developed by Richard Feynman. In this lecture, I'm going to pretty much follow the notes written by Richard McKenzie. Which you can find on the archive. So I'll just give you the archive link. They're really fantastic. They're way more in depth than what we're going to cover. But if this is the first time you're seeing path integrals, or if you want to brush up, I strongly recommend these notes. They're in depth, but really gentle, like very easy to follow. And I'm also going to post my personal notes after this lecture. So these contain everything I'm going to write on the board. So if you think you can follow better without writing everything down, don't feel that you have to write stuff down. You'll get a copy of all of it. Okay, and I'm also going to make use of this Gaussian integral at some stage in the lecture. And it's an integral that comes up a lot in quantum field theory. You'll be seeing it a lot, so I just wanted to highlight it here. And the last thing I wanted to say is that this entire lecture is pretty much one long derivation where I derive the path integral formalism. And so it's really important that you follow each step. But I know that it's sometimes easy to get lost in lectures. I want to be interrupted as much as possible. If you want one step explained a little bit more clearly, or if you even just want me to stop talking for 30 seconds for you to just like stare at it and figure out what happened, just let me know. And I'm very happy to stop. And just to stress how much I want you guys to interrupt me, I've written up this loyalty card here. So every time someone asks a question, I'm going to cross off one of these things. And if we can get to 10 by the end of the lecture, you guys get a prize. So really, like, I want you guys to interrupt me. So you can ask questions or get me to clarify things. Okay, so I guess we can get started. So in the 1920s, Heisenberg and Schrödinger and a bunch of people, they developed this the standard formulation of quantum mechanics, which is what we were looking at. And around 1933, Dirac kind of thought, isn't it weird that in classical mechanics, the action is kind of a central premise, while in quantum mechanics, the action just doesn't, you know, appear at all. So he posited that maybe the propagator in quantum mechanics can be thought of as e to the I on h s, where s is the classical action, for some classical path. And so that kind of idea hung around for a while. And eventually in 1948, Feynman was inspired by this, and he actually derived the path integral formalism, which shows that the propagator is actually the sum over all possible paths rather than just the classical action. The sum over all actions for all possible paths rather than just the classical action. So why are we interested in studying the path integral formalism? So it turns out that most, if not all, calculations in quantum mechanics are more difficult using the path integral formalism. So it won't be helpful in that regard. But it comes up a lot in quantum field theory. So you guys are going to use it in your upcoming quantum field theory courses. But it's much nicer to see it for the first time in quantum mechanics because it's kind of easier to follow what's going on. And also, as Feynman points out, there is a pleasure in recognizing old things from a new point of view. So even if it's not more useful in practice, it might help you think about things in a different way. Any questions at this point? Okay, so the central object of the path integral formalism is what's known as the propagator. So I just wanted to show you where this propagator comes from. So recall that we can write down a quantum state as a wave function. So it's going to have some sort of position and a time. And we can write this wave function as a projection of a state vector onto the position basis. And so since we're in the path integral formalism, we're going to be interested in particles traveling from one point to another. We want to actually write this in terms of what the state would be at, let's say, time zero. So I can write e to the minus I on h, ht, times state zero, times this state at time zero. So this is just your regular unitary operator acting on the input state. And then I want to make a connection between the position at the time zero and the position at time t. So I'm going to insert a resolution of identity in the position basis. So here, q is now going to be the position at time zero. And now I can just rearrange things a little bit. And rewrite this thing as a new wave function at time zero and position q. And so I can now just give this object a name. You can see it's going to be some function of the initial position and the final position, and it'll be a function of the time. So I can say this thing is some function position q prime t q zero. If I started at some time that wasn't zero, I would have some sort of time variable in there. So it's this object here that's known as the propagator. I'll just write it out explicitly. So it goes by the name the propagator. Sometimes it goes by the name the Green's function. Or the integral kernel. So these are all the same thing in this context. And you can see that it also corresponds to the probability amplitude of going from position q to position q prime. So it's sometimes called the probability amplitude as well. So in this context, all of those names are interchangeable, and they just mean the same thing. It's this function here. Okay, and you can see that what it does is it lets you calculate how the wave function changes as a function of time and calculate an output state. Okay, so now that we know what the propagator actually is, we're going to rewrite the propagator in the path integral formalism. So let's begin just with so we've got some sort of concrete example in our head. We can look at a particle moving in one dimension. we can write down the Hamiltonian. It's just the standard p squared on 2m plus some type of potential. And I'm going to, just so I don't have to carry around all the arguments of the propagator, I'm just going to write it as k. Oh, and it seems that in these notes I'm setting h bar to 1, so. Okay, so then the next step that, so this is known as the propagator going from position q to q prime, but we can split this up into kind of two time steps. So, and we do this by inserting the, splitting up this Hamiltonian into a product of two Hamiltonians and then putting in a resolution of identity. So let's first just split into, and then put in the resolution of identity. So you can see now what's going on is that we've broken up into two propagators. We've got a propagator from q to q1 and one from q1 to q prime. And we're summing over all of these possible intermediate positions, which is what this integral over q1 is. So I can just write it in terms of the individual propagators. So just to reiterate, we can think of this as a sum of over the individual points q1, which are the intermediate points between q and q prime. And so then we can do the same thing again, but rather than splitting it into two propagators, we can split it into n propagators and imagine all of these little intermediate points between q and q prime. So I'm going to use this, I'm going to split it into equal points. So here you could see that I kind of kept the point general. It could be closer to time equals zero or closer to capital T. But here I'm just splitting into n equal time bins, I guess. So I have q prime and then the exponential, where now delta is the time for the time step. And I have n of those. Okay, so I'm going to do the horrible thing where I'm going to ask you guys what the next step is. Maybe you can infer from what we did in the case of two particles, two time steps.
N identities.
N minus one identities.
N minus one identities, yep. N minus one. N's large, so it's the same thing. But yes, we want to insert resolutions of identity in between each of these exponentials. So this is going to be so much writing, but it's worth it. Like a mess. In my notes, I have way more of these in between to show you what the pattern is, but I didn't want to write them all down. But you can have a look later at the notes. But so what we've done is just put in the resolution of identity in between each of these guys. And now we can rewrite it as a product of individual propagators for each of the time steps. Almost done. Okay. So here now we have a product of propagators from position q0 to q1, q1 to q2, and so forth. And I've just defined this initial position as q0 and the final position as qn. And now I'm, because the propagator now doesn't depend on the times, because each time step is the same, I'm just indexing the propagator with the initial position and final position. And notice that this integral is over all of the intermediate positions, but the initial position and the final position are fixed. So those points are fixed, but we sum over all of the intermediate positions. So there's, I'm going to draw a diagram now, which hopefully lets you imagine what's going on. So in this diagram, I'm going to have position on the y-axis and time on the x-axis. And then I'm going to split it up into time steps delta. And so that expression there, it tells us that we have a fixed initial position. So let's pick a time equals 0. I'm going to pick some point q0. And I know I'm going to have a fixed position at time t as well. So let's pick this point qn. But then in the middle, for each time step, there's going to be a continuum of different possible positions. So I'll just pick a few, because I can't draw a continuum. This is not a good color. And then each of these points corresponds to a possible path that it could take, that the particle could take. So this is one path, or this path, or maybe that path. And then, of course, you know, there could be all sorts of different things happening inside here. So you can see that each of these terms inside this integral is going to be one of these paths. And so we can kind of, if we just ignore being precise, we can kind of write some sort of schematic equation. Which tells us that this propagator is going to be the sum over all possible paths. And the way that we denote a path is by its amplitude, because each of these k's is a probability amplitude of getting from, you know, one position to the other. So we can write down, we have a sum over paths, but it's actually the sum over amplitudes for each path. So, but this is just shorthand for, so sum over paths is actually this integral. And then we know that the amplitude for a path is going to be given by the product of these propagators.
integral up over there, you're integrating over dq1, modulo of dqn minus 1.
Yep, that, fantastic. That gets a check mark. Now 9 to go. What time is it? You guys better hurry. We're almost halfway through. Great. Okay, so now for the next bit, we want to consider just one of these little intervals. So, and because delta is small, we can do an expansion. So let's look at k. Okay, look at one interval. So all I've done is expanded the exponential to second order, which is okay because, as I mentioned, delta is small. And now I'll just expand the terms. And now I want to treat each of these terms. Let me not write it like that, sorry. So I'm only going to be interested in the first two terms, and then everything else is of order delta squared. So now I actually want to get some explicit expressions for these two first terms. So does anyone maybe have any ideas? So what I want to get is some sort of function in terms of position and momentum. Any ideas what this thing might look like? You don't need to know the answer, but kind of what is the inner product of?
A delta?
Yep, fantastic. Okay, so this is, let's write first term. Okay, so we can write this as a delta function. Not to be confused with the delta, the time interval. Sorry. And there are many definitions of the delta function, but one of them is as a Fourier transform of, I guess, a constant. So we can write this as an integral over momentum e to the I P J times the difference of the positions. And we're going to do something a little bit different for here, but essentially we're going to try and get something that resembles this expression here. Okay, so finally, we're actually going to make use of the fact that it gave you an explicit Hamiltonian. So this p squared on 2m plus some potential. So it's going to be minus I delta qj plus 1. And then I'm going to put in the Hamiltonian. Maybe I will ask you guys for another suggestion. Okay, so we want something that is going to sort of resemble that. What would be a good next step if we're trying to get in that direction? It's pretty much the only answer.
Insert momentum identity.
Yeah. Insert the identity. That's pretty much like all you do when you do proofs. When in doubt, insert the resolution of identity. Ah, but in which basis?
Momentum.
Yes. And the reason you do that is because you want to get some sort of inner product of these, the position and momentum. Okay, so now what I want to do is actually act these operators on the states so I can write them in terms of just the variables. So I'm going to act momentum in this direction on this momentum ket, and I'm going to act position in that direction on this position ket. And then I know how to evaluate this in a product, so I can rewrite that as. So you may notice that that this expression is kind of asymmetric, that we have j plus 1 and j here, and then this potential is only a function of j plus 1. That's because we put the resolution of identity on the left side, on the right side. If we'd put it on the left side, we would get something like q of j, which would also be asymmetric. So kind of the typical thing to do is to just take the average of these two, which is kind of not a very rigorous step. But in the end, it doesn't really matter because we take the continuum limit anyway.
There you mean bj, right? E to the minus I bj.
Yes, thank you. I'm going to give you a cross for that one, too. That's good. I guess I won't. I'll just stay on this side so that you can all see. Okay, so now I had expressions for the first term and the second term, and I want to put everything back into the propagator again. Yes. Yeah, that was poorly written. Let me bring it down.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Okay.
What are we actually doing?
Yeah, so it just might look a bit unsettling that this thing is asymmetric because we have qj plus 1 here, but then the rest of the expression is j plus 1 and has j's in it. And the reason we have qj plus 1 here is just because of our choice of where we put this resolution of identity. We could have just put the resolution of identity on this side if we wanted. And then we'd get the same pj, but then q would act in the other direction on here, and we would get a qj rather than a qj plus 1. So it's kind of like weird that our choice of where we put the identity is going to lead to different solutions. So to feel a little bit better about it, we just take the average of qj and qj plus 1. But it doesn't really matter in the end because we're going to be taking the continuum limit of n goes to infinity. So the exact position of the q's won't matter. But just to be notationally nice, we're taking the average. It's not a rigorous explanation. Like, I'm sure you could justify this mathematically, but I won't do that. Yeah.
I have a question about a minus sign.
Yes.
In that e to the ipj qj plus 1 minus qj?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a minus in front.
Maybe there shouldn't be, is there? There should not be a minus. Thank you. Yeah, I guess I write down a lot of unitary operators, so I just naturally put the minus sign always in there. Okay, and now, so we had, just want to make sure that I have all the subscripts right. Right, so that's the expression for just one of the k's in this product of all of the k's. So now we want to actually take n of those expressions and combine them. So we have a path is going to be let me just simplify this a little bit further. So you can see that this is kind of like a Taylor series of an exponential. So before we had an exponential in terms of the Hamiltonian and operators, we expanded it so that we could act the operators on these basis states, but now we want to take that expansion and turn it back into an exponential in terms of the position and momentum variables. Yes?
Somewhere in that line on the left, you're missing a parenthesis.
It's possible.
I don't know if it's on the right.
Yes.
Side of the year or the left side.
I'm going to say it's here. Yes. Fantastic. So exciting. So let me just rewrite this. And then this is going to be an exponential. Ah, no one picked up on that one. And we have this extra 1 plus order of delta out here because we don't know that this exactly is the Taylor series for this exponential, but it is up to order delta squared. Anything else? Okay, I think we had two more in the bank here. I'm not making these mistakes deliberately. Okay, so now I want to take n of those and multiply them by each other. So let me write it out and then we'll go through it. Right, so it's a product of all of those functions. So we have a multivariable integral. So this product here just refers to the integration variables. And then when we take a product of exponentials, that's the same of just adding the exponents together. So here now we have a sum over all of those exponents. And I've now put back, I've written the Hamiltonian in a more general sense. And then we have this extra bit here, which is written in terms of the velocity. So here it's just kind of an approximation to the first derivative, where we have a change in position over the time step. Oh, and I've neglected this 1 plus order of delta squared component, but that's going to disappear when we take this limit where n goes to infinity, so we don't have to keep track of it.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Should it go from j equals 0 to n minus 1? Because j is equals 0.
Isn't it j equals 0?
For the p's.
I think it should be 0.
Yeah?
Yes. I'm missing an integral. Pardon me?
This is for one path.
For one path, yeah. Okay, but we're getting there. Oh my God. Okay, and you guys were anticipating where we're going with this. We want to actually write down the whole propagator, which is a sum over the paths. So we'll have an integral over this expression that we just wrote down. So as I guess you were alluding to, we wanted just to take note of the fact that the integration over the q variables is from j equals 1 to n minus 1, while for momentum it's j equals 0 to j equals n minus 1. Okay, and now you can take the continuum limit. Write this as Okay, so how should we read what's going on here? So when we took the continuum limit, this sum over the different times turned into an integral. And then these, expressions here should just be thought of as integrals over all of the different functions, p of t and q of t. So that's kind of just a schematic shorthand of writing things down. But if you ever want to do calculations with it, you have to understand that this actually means this expression here in the continuum limit. So you would write things out like that, do your calculations, and then take the continuum limit. Yeah?
The expressions on the left of this current board, all of the sums and the products are independent, right?
They're independent. Yes. Well, it depends what you mean by that. So, so later, I mean, you'll have coupled Gaussian integrals.
Right. So you just mean the sum and the.
That's independent from that.
Exponential is not the same as the product over those.
Exactly. Yeah. So those things, that product just refers to that guy. That product just refers to that guy, and that sum just refers to what's in the exponential. Okay, so this phase space integral, path integral, is actually not what Feynman actually derived. He derived something else called the configuration space integral, and he didn't do it the way that we're doing it. This is a more pedagogical way of seeing what's going on. But we can actually get the configuration space path integral from this by taking a specific type of Hamiltonian, which can be broken down into this form. So let's do that. And then we're almost finished. Okay, so if we have a Hamiltonian like that, it's actually nice because when we insert that in here, we can take the position part and take it outside of the momentum integral and do that on its own, and then do the momentum integral on its own as well. So let's write this out. Did I give you a check mark? No. Okay, we need one more to get the prize. Okay, so we've been able to take the position part out of the front. And now all of these momentum integrals, they're uncoupled. So we can use this expression for the Gaussian integral to solve them. So here what I've done is just taken one of those integrals. I mean, this is a product of different integrals, but just one of them, and used that Gaussian integral to calculate an expression for it. And then putting all of that back into the expression for the propagator. And then I can simplify that by combining these two exponentials. So now we have n times this coefficient out the front, and then we have a product. Oh, yeah, okay, yep. Product of integrals over Q. With a sum in the exponent. So I've taken that potential function and put it in here. Right. So in the same way that we did for the phase space half integral, we can write this in a more compact notation as k is equal to integral over the functions q e to the I s, which is the action for the path given by q of t. Oh, that's if we take the continuum limit n goes to infinity. So the reason we get the action here is because we have t minus, yeah?
I was just wondering, why can't we do that already, the expression above, the phase space integral?
Yeah, it's a good
BQ
question.
Dot minus h is actually the Lagrangian.
Because it's possible that you won't be able to separate the, so in this Hamiltonian, the momentum term and the position term, you've got a sum of these two things. But if you had products of, if the Hamiltonian had products of momentum and position, you wouldn't be able to do this separation that we did here, where we brought the position up there. You're worried that you're saying that this could just be written as the action because it's like t minus v.
We have well-defined Legendre transform.
Yeah. I don't know how to answer that question. I think it's a good question. So let me follow up on that, and maybe I can tell you this afternoon. It seems. Yeah. Does anyone want to have a stab at answering that? Yeah? What, oral?
think he's right. I think it's just the fact that you don't necessarily know it's going to be a well-defined blade motion.
Okay.
That's what I would think.
Is that what you were going to say as well?
Yeah, I was going to say you can go right to phase space interval, very similar to that. It's just that your action now depends on your Q of T as well as your P of T.
Okay.
At the end of the day, it's kind of just short.
Sounds good. Thanks. Okay, so this expression here, which is simpler, is what we get if we take the continuum limit, and now we have an integral over all of the functions x of t, and something written in terms of the action of all of these paths. And so this expression here is actually the thing Feynman derived. Yes?
You're off by infinity.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Yeah, I don't know.
No, I think that the prefactor goes into the measure.
Goes into the what?
The measure, the DQ.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I believe it. You define the DQT as the prefactor times the product.
I mean, it's just a shorthand notation anyway. It's kind of the thing you would write down to remember what the action is. But in practice, when you ever want to do calculations, you have to replace it with that. I think you guys, yeah, that's like full on prize. Okay, woo! So after the lecture, I'm going to explain what the prize is. I'm super excited about it. Congratulations.
Prize is homework.
Homework, yeah. Okay, so we have 10 more minutes. I had two examples to go through, so the free particle and the simple harmonic oscillator. So I don't think I'll get to the simple harmonic oscillator, but at least I'll do it for the free particle. So the examples, we're just going to show how you would derive the propagator for the free particle using regular quantum mechanics, and then I'll show you how to do it using the path integral. And you'll see that it's like way more involved doing it the path integral way. So as I said at the beginning, the motivation here isn't to come up with a more practical way of doing quantum mechanics, but it's to get a feel for what's going on so that you can understand, you can use it in quantum field theory where it actually does become practically useful. But so just as a pedagogical example, let's look at the case of the free particle. So I'm going to have to erase some stuff, maybe at the top. So the free particle has a simple Hamiltonian. It's just H equals P squared on 2m. And let's first just do compute the path, the propagator using quantum mechanics. So the propagator is the probability amplitude of getting from position q to q prime. So we can write out the Hamiltonian. And as always, insert a resolution of identity. And then we can act the momentum operator on this momentum ket. So now momentum is just a number, and we can move this position bra over to that side. And we know what the expressions for these inner products are. So that term here just came from these inner products. Yeah. Okay, so that's it. That's easy. Just three lines. It's a bit more involved in the path integral formalism, but let's give it a go. Oh, actually, we're not even finished yet. So the last thing that we want to do is actually do that integral, which we can do using the Gaussian integral expression there, and get so just to remind you what the significance of this is an expression that you would plug in to, did I erase it? Maybe I erased it. But remember, we had this expression for a wave function at position q prime time t was given by an integral over the propagator. Acting on the wave function at position q and t0. So if you have this expression, you can actually evolve the wave function according for some time interval. Okay, so now we want to see how do we get the same expression using the path integral formalism. Well, we want to do it using the configuration space path integral, which this is the shorthand. But if we want to do explicit calculations, we want to take this expression here. Oh, I like so don't want to write this out, but I'm gonna. Okay, so we can see that we have a series of uncoupled integrals here. So each one of those can just be evaluated using hang on a sec. No, they're coupled, jeez. I'm not even going to show you how to do it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so we're going to do a similar thing in the tutorial where we look at solving coupled integrals, but you need a bunch of tricks. So I'll just tell you what the answer is.
J plus 1 minus QJ over delta.
Can I replace?
But then there's a problem.
I think you can only do that in the... Oh, no, it's not in the limit. Yeah, you can do that. But will that help?
No.
Yeah. I think it's, like, from memory, I think it's a pretty involved thing. But don't worry, you'll get an opportunity to try it. Okay, so then I can rewrite this as. And now notice that n times delta, which is the time interval, is going to be the total time capital T. So we can write this as okay, yeah, so we get the same thing as we got doing quantum mechanics. It looks like I only did three lines, but there's, like, this thing is a huge mess. So, yes?
There seems to be a sign difference between the two.
Where does that come from? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there shouldn't be a sign difference, but I can't see where it comes from. Maybe we can try to look in a minute. Do you guys see where the sign, yeah?
I think it's in the Q1.
Who's, I can hear a voice, but I
think the positive one.
Yeah.
I think the positive one's right. I think the mistake is in the QM one. I think when you do 1/4a, I think the I, since you're moving the I up to the numerator, it should go to positive I instead of negative I, I think.
Up here?
No, the other way.
Like when you're doing your Gaussian integral.
Here?
Last line, that one, when you use the Gaussian integral.
When you use the Gaussian integral formula and you do the 1/4a, a has the no, because a is defined with the positive, no, never mind. Never mind.
That's, let's just,
what's actually
I'm just going to do that.
What's the definition of PQ and Q prime B?
Yeah.
Because in one case, it's e to the minus
I. Yeah, I might have the wrong definition
and
here.
Probably that's where things are going wrong.
I'll buy that. It's so hard to reason through these things when you're up here. Yeah. But,
I don't remember if QP is...
No, I never remember. Yeah. Yep. But anyway, let's go with that. Up to minus sign. They're the same. So the last thing I wanted to say was, if you recall, the action... for a free particle it's MQ minus how do I want to write it? Okay, the action for a free particle is, do you have a question?
I think it's
is half mv squared on times t. So you can see here that q prime minus q on t is going to be the velocity. So you can actually rewrite this as... where S is the classical action. So what we found is that the propagator is written in terms of the classical action for the classical path of a free particle. So we can do the same thing for the harmonic oscillator. I'm not going to do it, but like I said, I'm going to give you the notes so you can go through that in detail. Okay, are there any questions?